Imagine for a second that you walked into a wildly popular, super crowded restaurant.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right. But as you sit down, you look around and you realize that like half the diners are actually just mannequins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, mannequins that the owner hired just to make the place look busy. Would you actually trust the food there?
I mean, no, absolutely not. I'd walk right out.
Exactly. You probably wouldn't. But right now, if you look at the raw data of what is happening across the internet today, that is exactly the situation we are all sitting in.
Yeah, it really is.
We've basically wandered into a giant hall of mirrors. The metrics we use to decide, what is valuable, what's authentic, and who is actually pulling the strings, they're completely breaking down.
It is arguably the defining tension of our current technological era. I mean, we're watching the very foundations of digital trust being actively disassembled and reassembled in real time.
Right.
We rely on these proxy signals to navigate the internet, and those signals are just being entirely flooded right now.
And that brings us to the mission for today's deep dive. We are looking at a stack of sources from the April 21st, 2026 edition of the Tech and AI Daily Newsletter.
And honestly, if you just glance at these headlines individually, they kind of just look like standard disconnected industry updates.
Yeah, totally standard. But we are going to cut right through that noise today
Yeah.
because there is a massive underlying narrative happening
Or a
here.
very fierce one, yeah.
Yeah, a fierce multi-front tug of war over control, authenticity, and trust in the digital age. So, okay, let's unpack this because by the end of our time together, you are going to be equipped with the most crucial insights to sound incredibly well-informed in your next meeting.
Absolutely.
We really have to start at the absolute top of the food chain here. Apple just made it the biggest leadership move since Steve Jobs handed the reins to Tim Cook.
Which is huge news.
Yeah, Cook is moving to executive chairman, and John Ternus, the hardware engineering chief, is stepping up as the new CEO.
And elevating Ternus is just a massive structural signal from Apple. I mean, they bypassed marketing, they bypassed the services division, and they essentially handed the keys to the architect of their physical processing power.
Right, because Ternus is the person who shepherded Apple Silicon. He built the M series chips.
Exactly.
It's kind of less like a typical corporate promotion and more like a medieval kingdom deciding that instead of hiring better frontline soldiers, they're going to put the master architect who designs their fortress walls in charge of the entire kingdom.
That's a really good way to put it.
Apple is securing its physical hardware dominance. But then, look at what is happening over in the software world. Right next to this in the newsletter, you have Figma facing intense multi-directional pressure from Anthropic's new Claude design tool.
The design market is shifting way faster than Figma's roadmap could adapt.
Yeah, so Apple is fortifying its castle with physical chips, while Figma is watching the walls of its software castle basically get breached by generative models.
Right, so let's break down the mechanics of why that software vulnerability even exists in the first place. Figma's entire value proposition, like their fundamental moat, was built on collaborative interface design directly in the browser.
Which was revolutionary at the time.
Oh, totally. It was incredibly difficult to engineer a zero latency multiplayer canvas where, five designers could manipulate vectors simultaneously.
Right.
But Claude Design just doesn't care about a collaborative canvas. Generative UI models bypass the vector manipulation stage entirely.
Wait, really? It just skips it.
Yeah, entirely. When an AI can take a text prompt and generate a flawless, completely functional React component or a full interface in 10 seconds, the need for five humans to collaborate on a vector canvas just evaporates.
I gotta push back a little on that, though. I mean, Figma has been aggressively rolling out their own native AI features over the last year. They aren't just sitting still. Doesn't integrating AI into their existing ecosystem kind of protect their user base?
It's a good point. But strapping generative features onto a legacy workflow is fundamentally different from a zero-to-one AI-native workflow.
Ah, okay.
Figma is using AI to make the old way of doing things faster. Anthropic's Claude design is attempting to eliminate the old way of doing things entirely.
Wow, okay.
And that is exactly why software is so vulnerable right now. It is purely code, which means it can be disrupted overnight by a more efficient model. What Apple is doing with Ternus recognizes a core physical limitation.
Which is that AI models still require massive amounts of compute to run.
Exactly. You can generate a million lines of code in an afternoon, but you cannot magically generate a billion high-performance microchips. Hardware is the ultimate defensive play because it's bound by the laws of physics and supply chains.
Right, which means the barrier to entry for creating software is plummeting to zero, while the barrier to entry for the hardware that runs it remains astronomically high. And that pressure Figma is feeling from Claude Design, it leads directly into the sheer velocity of the AI arms race happening in the background. The sources make it super clear the frontier of model development is increasingly happening outside the traditional Western corporate monopolies.
Right, we're seeing a huge geographic shift.
Yeah, Alibaba just dropped the Qwen 3.6 Max preview, and it's hitting massive benchmark numbers, showing noticeably improved reasoning. And honestly, the Qwen team is shipping at a pace that is frankly making Western labs look incredibly slow.
Yeah, and then you pair that with Moonshot AI releasing Kimi K2.6. We really need to dissect why the open-weight nature of models like Qwen and Kimi is structurally altering enterprise architecture.
Okay, yeah, let's get into that.
Because when a developer builds an application relying on a closed API from a massive tech giant, they're essentially just renting a brain. The architecture sends proprietary data to a cloud endpoint, it waits for inference, and then it receives the output.
Right, and if the provider raises API prices or changes their terms of service or deprecates the specific model your app relies on, your entire infrastructure just breaks.
Exactly. That is the glaring vulnerability of closed ecosystems. What Kimi K2.6 does is provide a GPT-4-level code generation model that developers can literally download, host on their own local GPU clusters, and control completely.
It severs the dependency.
Yes. For an enterprise handling, say, sensitive financial data or proprietary code bases, sending that data to a third-party cloud API is often a massive security risk. Open-weight models allow them to bring the intelligence inside their own secure perimeter.
But, I mean, running and maintaining local GPU clusters, that is a massive DevOps headache.
It is, yeah.
It requires specialized talent and massive infrastructure costs. Most companies don't want to be in the business of managing hardware. They just want the output. That's exactly why closed APIs won the last decade of cloud computing, right?
That is a very fair critique of the current implementation, definitely. But the tooling to orchestrate local models is maturing rapidly. The trade-off between DevOps friction and data sovereignty is actively shifting.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And speaking of the output of these code generation models, we have to look at what Anthropic is doing in response to this flood of open source coding capability. They shipped Claude Opus 4.7, but the really crucial update in the newsletter is the preview of Claude Mythos.
Right, Claude Mythos. It's positioned as their most powerful model, but it is specifically tuned for finding software security vulnerabilities.
Exactly.
And this is where I start looking at the landscape and wondering if we've just completely lost the plot.
I mean,
well, if open source models like Kimi are getting this good at writing code at an industrial scale, and then specialized models like Mythos are being designed specifically to hunt for security vulnerabilities in that code, aren't we just entering a phase where AIs are literally just fighting AIs? Like, we are deploying one AI to generate the application and then turning around and paying for another AI to attack it and defend it.
It sounds like a dystopian feedback loop, I know. But structurally, it is an arms race of compute. Consider the mechanics of how Claude Mythos actually operates compared to older tools.
Oh, okay.
Traditional static application security testing tools, they just look for known patterns. They scan for hard-coded passwords or very basic SQL injection flaws.
Right, the simple stuff.
Yeah, but Mythos is analyzing the abstract syntax trees of the code. It is actively looking for complex, multi-step logical vulnerabilities that human reviewers just consistently miss.
Because human reviewers are drowning. I mean, when a junior developer uses an AI agent to generate 5,000 lines of functional but potentially insecure code in an hour, there is physically no way for a senior engineer to thoroughly review the underlying logic of every single pull request.
That is the core vulnerability right there. We are scaling the generation of code infinitely, but human review capacity remains completely finite.
Yeah.
So tools like Mythos aren't just a novelty. They are an absolute necessity. The security landscape is becoming incredibly reckless simply because the volume of synthetic code is overwhelming our traditional defense mechanisms.
So we have this absolute explosion of AI capabilities. Code is being written at lightning speed. Designs are being generated on the fly. We are basically automating the friction out of creation.
Yes.
But that leads to a massive, really uncomfortable side effect. We are completely polluting the proxy metrics we use to decide what is actually valuable. Which brings us right back to that crowded restaurant with the mannequins.
Exactly. Let's look at the GitHub ecosystem. The newsletter highlights a detailed investigation into the GitHub fake star economy. It is a massive, thriving paid industry right now.
And we aren't just talking about a few bots clicking a button in a basement somewhere. People are buying thousands of fake stars to game trending pages.
Right.
And more importantly, they're doing it to game venture capital due diligence algorithms. VCs scrape GitHub repositories looking for early stage traction to decide what startups to actually fund.
And to understand why this is so damaging, you really have to look at how a GitHub star is actually faked these days. You can't just create 10,000 empty accounts today and star a repository.
Right. I assume GitHub's anti-spam algorithms would catch that immediately.
Exactly. They would flag it in a second. So the shadow economy operates by cultivating aged accounts. These bot networks mimic actual developer activity over months.
Wait, so they act like real people?
Yeah. They fork repositories, they make trivial commits to random open source projects, they maintain diverse IP addresses. By the time they are directed to star a client's repository, they look mathematically indistinguishable from a human developer.
Wow. Which fundamentally breaks the venture capital model. The VC relies on the star as a proxy for human consensus.
Exactly.
If a project has 10,000 stars, the assumption was always that 10,000 highly skilled human engineers looked at the code base, evaluated its architecture, and decided it was valuable.
The metric represented friction. It represented actual human effort, time, and attention. But generative AI and sophisticated automation have reduced the friction of simulating that human consensus to near zero.
And the economic incentives to fake it are just overwhelming. I mean, if a startup founder knows a VC will wire them $5 million in seed funding because their open source project looks like the next big thing on the trending page, the incentive to pay a shadow firm a few thousand dollars for a sophisticated botnet star campaign is incredibly high.
It's an arbitrage opportunity, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's not just the code side. The culture side is facing the exact same collapse of proxy metrics. The newsletter notes that Deezer, the music streaming platform, reported a staggering 44% of daily song uploads to their platform are AI generated.
That number is wild.
Nearly half of the new music entering their ecosystem is synthetic.
The mechanics of that pipeline are honestly fascinating. It's a fully automated loop. An API script prompts an audio generation model to produce, say, a 2-minute lo-fi hip-hop track. Then another script prompts an image model to generate the cover art. The metadata is auto-generated, and the entire package is pushed directly into Deezer's ingestion pipeline. It is a zero marginal cost operation.
So an anonymous user can generate thousands of these tracks a day, flood the platform, and just collect fractions of a cent in streaming royalties every single time an algorithmic playlist accidentally serves their track to a human listener.
And just like GitHub stars, the sheer volume of uploads used to be a reliable indicator of human artistic effort.
Because it took time, right? You had to write a song, book a studio, mix the track, upload it.
Exactly. Deezer's infrastructure, and the infrastructure of Spotify and Apple Music, was built on the assumption that the friction of creation would act as a natural filter. Generative AI removed the filter.
Wow.
The infrastructure of digital trust has been rendered completely meaningless. We are flying blind, relying on signals that no longer measure what we think they measure.
Which naturally leads to an inevitable reaction. Because when digital ecosystems become this flooded with synthetic sludge, and when corporate AI tools begin overreaching into private workflows to train themselves on whatever data they can find, users start organizing. The pendulum swings back.
Action always creates reaction. Let's examine the Atlassian situation detailed in sources.
Yeah, this is a big one.
Atlassian, the company behind Jira and Confluence, instituted a silent opt-in for AI training data collection across their ecosystem.
A silent opt-in.
Yes. There was no loud announcement, no major press release, just a background settings change.
Meaning, if your company uses Jira to track software bugs or Confluence to store proprietary internal documentation, Atlassian is now using that private work data by default to train their AI products.
Now, looking at this purely from an ecosystem architecture perspective, and to be clear, we aren't taking a side here. We're just analyzing the mechanics.
Right, just reporting the facts of the shift.
Right. It is an aggressive but entirely logical strategy for a company like Atlassian. The value of a foundational model is plateauing. The true differentiator for enterprise AI now is context.
Context about the specific company?
Exactly. Atlassian is trying to build a highly contextual enterprise knowledge graph. To do that, their models need to ingest the messy, proprietary reality of how teams actually communicate, assign tasks, and resolve bugs.
Yeah.
The Jira tickets and Confluence pages are the most valuable corpus of enterprise workflow data in the world.
But the developers and companies writing those tickets view that data as their sovereign proprietary property. They do not want their internal bug reports being digested into a massive corporate model.
Absolutely.
And that friction is fueling what the newsletter calls the AI resistance. We are seeing a distinct shift here. This isn't just individuals complaining on social media anymore. We are seeing coordinated community and worker action pushing back against forced AI adoption and data extraction.
And the market reaction to top-down data extraction is always a demand for localized sovereign tools.
Mm-hmm.
That is why the Hacker News post highlighted in the sources is so incredibly significant.
Yes, a developer built an OpenClaw-based local AI agent, and it hit 249 points on Hacker News.
That is a massive signal.
It really is. That means serious engineers are not just reading about it, they are actively downloading it, stress testing it, and trying to integrate it into their daily workflows.
We need to explain the mechanism of a local agent like OpenClaw because it's different. Unlike a web-based chatbot where you paste in text and ask for an answer, a local agent interfaces directly with your machine's operating system.
Right.
You grant it permissions to read your local file system, execute shell commands, and run scripts.
Which, I mean, that sounds incredibly dangerous if you are connecting it to a cloud API.
Yeah.
If I give an agent access to my terminal, I absolutely do not want that agent sending my file structures back to an OpenAI or Anthropic server.
Exactly the point. That is exactly why the demand for OpenClaw is surging. It utilizes small, highly specialized local models that run entirely on the user's silicon, often utilizing the exact M-series chips Apple is banking its future on.
Oh, full circle.
Yeah. The data never leaves the laptop. The developer gets the leverage of an AI assistant, like automating boilerplate code or sorting through local logs, without sacrificing an ounce of data sovereignty. It is a direct rejection of the cloud extraction model Atlassian is pushing.
It's about drawing a hard boundary around your own work. And I love this final piece of news from the stack because it highlights a completely different approach to that same desire for control. Posit dropped an alpha of a tool called GSQIODE.
Yes.
It brings the highly expressive, layered grammar of graphics directly to SQL database queries.
And for listeners who might not work in data science, the grammar of graphics is a philosophy of data visualization. It was popularized by a tool called ggplot2 in the R programming language.
Okay, so how does it actually work?
Well, instead of just picking a chart type from a menu, the grammar of graphics allows a user to build a visualization layer by layer. You define the data, the aesthetic mappings, the geometric objects, and the statistical transformations all independently.
Which makes the code modular and incredibly expressive. But writing raw SQL queries to extract data from massive databases has always been the complete opposite of that.
Definitely.
SQL queries often turn into these monolithic, thousand-line walls of text. They're just incredibly brittle and really hard for humans to parse.
And by bringing that layered modular grammar to SQL, GGSQL is fundamentally changing the data scientist's workflow. It allows them to compose complex database queries with high-level, human-readable logic.
And this is exactly why it matters in the context of the AI arms race. Sometimes developers and data scientists don't want an AI to write their SQL query for them.
No, they don't.
They know that AI models frequently hallucinate schema details or write incredibly inefficient table joins that end up costing the company thousands of dollars in cloud compute. They don't want to outsource the cognitive work to a black box model. They just want a better, more expressive, human-driven tool to do the work themselves. They want leverage, not replacement.
Exactly. If we look at the underlying architecture of these different movements,
mm-hmm.
the anger over Atlassian's data pipeline, the surge of interest in OpenClaw's local execution, and the enthusiasm for a non-AI tool like GGSQL, they're unified by a single demand.
Digital agency.
Yes, digital agency. As the internet floods with synthetic content and automated metrics, the premium on tools that allow humans to exert precise, sovereign control over their own data and logic is just skyrocketing.
It's the ultimate tug of war. We've covered a massive amount of ground today, so let's synthesize the journey a bit. We started by watching Apple reorganize its entire leadership structure around John Ternus, doubling down on the physical hardware moat because software giants like Figma are watching their own moats evaporate under the pressure of generative UI.
Right. And then we mapped the mechanics of the AI arms race, examining how open-weight models from Alibaba and Moonshot AI are offering enterprises a way to run powerful logic locally, bypassing those closed APIs entirely.
Right.
Meanwhile, Anthropic is deploying specialized models like Mythos to analyze abstract syntax trees just to catch the vulnerabilities generated by this massive acceleration in automated coding.
And from there, we explored the very real fallout of that acceleration, the complete collapse of digital trust. We broke down the shadow economy of GitHub star bot networks fooling VC algorithms and the automated pipelines flooding Deezer with zero-cost synthetic music. The proxy metrics that used to signal human friction and quality are effectively dead.
Which naturally leads to the market's immune response.
Mm.
Users are waking up to the extraction of their data, whether it is Atlassian's silent Jira opt-in or just broader corporate overreach.
Yeah, they're fighting back.
They're organizing, building local agents like OpenClaw to keep their logic private, and rallying around expressive tools like Jigs Esquile that enhance human craftsmanship rather than replacing it.
People are fighting to reclaim their agency in a digital world that honestly feels completely synthetic right now. It is a massive structural shift. But before we wrap up, we have to look at the horizon.
Yes. As we survey this entire landscape, from the flooded music platforms to the polluted code repositories, it raises an incredibly important structural question, one that we want to leave you to mull over today.
What's the question?
If 44% of new music on Deezer is AI-generated and GitHub repositories are increasingly filled with AI-generated code boosted by fake bot stars, and even private Jira documentation is being swept up to train foundational models, what happens when the next generation of AI models begins scraping the internet for training data?
Oh, wow. I mean, they aren't going to be scraping human output anymore.
Exactly. They will be ingesting the synthetic code, the fake reviews, and the lo-fi tracks generated by the last generation of models. In machine learning, this is known as model collapse.
Model collapse.
As an AI trains on the synthetic output of another AI, the underlying logic degrades. The nuances vanish.
Mm.
Are we inadvertently building a massive, self-reinforcing digital echo chamber where actual human creation is no longer the foundation of the internet, but is actually the statistical minority?
It brings us right back to that hall of mirrors, only now the mirrors are just reflecting other mirrors. The mannequins in the restaurant are the ones writing the reviews, and the AI models are reading those reviews to learn how to cook.
It's a wild thought.
It's a wild, slightly terrifying thought to leave you with. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the underlying architecture of the tech world. Go check your privacy settings, keep questioning the metrics you see online, and we will catch you next time.